Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. When the U.S. first invaded Afghanistan in 2001, no one imagined the conflict would last nearly two decades. But 19 years later, there are still U.S. troops on the ground. Although the U.S. government is currently withdrawing some troops from the war-torn country, the landmark peace agreement signed late last month by the U.S. and the Taliban is now in question. For Sam Rogers, this agreement is a step in the right direction, but the obstacles are all too familiar. Since doing three tours in Afghanistan, he's become a vocal opponent of what he considers an endless war. Rogers is now the Coalition's director for Concerned Veterans for America in Wisconsin. He joins me in studio. Sam, thank you so much for being here on Lake Effect.
Thanks for having me.
So you did three tours in Afghanistan.
I did, with the United States Army.
First as an interrogator and then as an intelligence officer.
Yeah.
What were those experiences like?
Well, my first deployment was during the 2009 Afghanistan surge under President Obama. It was in the southern part of the country, you know, where there was serious fighting. It was certainly my most challenging deployment. Our unit, you know, suffered 40 soldiers killed, I think over 350 casualties, amputees. But at the same time, you know, there was we were fighting in you know, the enemy and protecting each other and retaking parts of Afghanistan that had been lost after 2003. And so it was also rewarding in that we could see the difference we were making and all that kind of stuff. And then my second deployment, 2012, 2013, Afghanistan was safer, but there was more – I was at a slightly higher level that – and I guess I saw more and more bureaucratic kind of infighting – you know, between government organizations internally in the military, it seemed like we were kind of spending more time fighting with each other, fighting over projects, stuff like that. And I left the Army after that, went to school here in Milwaukee at UW-Milwaukee, and eventually went back to the Army as a civil servant, as an intelligence officer, and I did a third tour in Afghanistan in 2015, 2016. That really solidified to me kind of this pressing problem that we're essentially making work for ourselves there, and I couldn't really be a part of it anymore. So I kind of, you know, talked to my wife and I said, yeah, I need a change of careers. But it was hard for me to walk away from, you know, soldiers, sailors, Marines, Coasties, airmen who, you know, were in harm's way because I'm supposed to be that invisible line of defense, right? I'm supposed to be disrupting enemy networks and plans and thwarting attacks and ambushes and things before they happen. And so in 2018, after my one of my proteges, one of my former soldiers was killed in Somalia, I was taking some pre-law courses and really started doing some looking into the 2001 AUMF, which is the Afghanistan invasion document that was passed by Congress after 9/11. It's a very short document that describes why we're going into Afghanistan and what we're doing there. And that was the justification for having troops in Somalia in 2018. That really kind of shook me to my core and got me engaged in what is now this nationally coordinated campaign to end endless wars.
You know, you said something interesting about your third tour in Afghanistan, that you found essentially, I believe the words you use are, the U.S. is making work for ourselves. What do you mean by that?
So, I mean, it goes by a lot of different terms. I guess mission creep is a good one. You know, the things that the American people sent the military to do in Afghanistan in 2001 were all accomplished very quickly, right? They destroyed the Taliban government, who, you know, were supporting al-Qaeda and refused to turn them over. They killed the vast majority of al-Qaeda fighters and commanders and stuff like that. And then we just stayed there. And the longer we stayed there, the more complicated those problems that existed well before we were there became. And so, and I think in that vacuum that's devoid of civilian leadership, right, civilian executive leadership, government organizations, government agencies, the military, they just find things to do. You know, the Congress never sent the military to Afghanistan to nation build, right? They didn't send us there to build shopping malls, but those are things we tried to do. And there's been lots of honorable attempts at good work there, but it's essentially make work. And it's things that the American people never really got a say in. And so these things have just been happening over and over and over again. I mean, it consumes a lot of resources, right? Spent over $1 trillion in Afghanistan alone. Consumes our most precious resource, which is people. 3,000 people have been killed there. In addition to, I think, over 1 million life-changing disabilities over the course of the Afghan war to service members. We've engaged essentially nonstop with our special operations forces and, you know, aggressively hunting the, you know, the worst bad guys there. But those guys and gals, part of that community, I mean, they do this stuff nonstop, back to back to back. I've got friends with 10-plus deployments, and they don't have any rest. There's broken families. You know, we're exhausting this resource of our best people to protect us in a real emergency, right, in a real conflict that could arise. We're exhausting that resource. And we're at the point now where what should have been, what was designed to be, what was described as a punitive expedition, right, to go there and punish the Taliban and to take out Al-Qaeda, has turned into this thing where we're killing the grandkids of the people who started this. And it's unsustainable. But no one has stepped up in a meaningful way to end this. And so that's what we're trying to support. We're trying to bring people together, to stand together, to set aside hyperpartisanship for, if nothing else, just this issue, to engage the Congress to repeal that 2001 AUMF, which by both parties and both presidents has been reinterpreted over and over again to include invasions of like 40 different countries. And if we're going to send people in harm's way, there just needs to be a rigorous public debate in the Congress about it so that the American people can say, I don't think that's in our national interest. I don't want to see kids from my school, from my church, from my soccer team. I don't want to see them put at risk for this.
So the U.S. recently signed a landmark agreement with the Taliban. What did you think of that news?
It's a good step. It's great that the president who ran on ending the Afghanistan war is trying to take forward movement in this issue. But like I said, I have personally seen previous attempts, you know, under President Obama, whether it's reintegration into the government, whether it's ceasefires or peace deals, I've seen a lot of these things fall apart. And so it's not a replacement for withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan. But it is, it's a good signal. And I think it shows people that this is an area that they should be coming together on. I mean, this is probably the thing that the president and congressional Democrats agree on. We want congressional accountability. Less than 20% of the people in Congress who voted for the 2001 AUMF are still there, right? We want Congress to vote on these things so they can be held accountable to them. We want future AUMFs, authorizations for use of military force, to be extremely specific so that these things can't happen. I mean, the whole reason the War Powers Act was passed was to avoid this exact situation, and now we've been there twice as long as the Soviet Union was. And so we're not approaching this from an explicitly, you know, anti-war or anti-military or any of that perspective. We just want a future where the military, use of the military, is not the first step in engaging in other people's problem-solving process, right? It should be the last resort. And I think historically that has served our country extremely well from World War I to World War II. You know, we didn't get engaged until it was absolutely the last possible choice. And because of that, we came out of those conflicts in a much better place than really the rest of the entire world. I think we need to recalibrate how we look at using our military to engage around the world.
Well, it feels like just from an outside perspective, there's been some level of degradation in that process since we entered the conflict in Korea. Since we went to Vietnam and then this kind of unfolding of the process as we've moved further into more recent decades.
Right. And we are the 800-pound trillion-dollar gorilla in the room. You know, people talk about like, well, how is Afghanistan going to adjust? Well, nobody knows what normalcy even looks like for them right now, because everything that they do is built around us sitting there. And, you know, it's not the 1900s. We've got extremely high quality telecommunication capabilities. We can engage diplomatically around the world without having to send the military first. We can share our vision for a better world through trade and educational exchange and diplomacy and all these other tools that are constructive and collaborative rather than deconstructive and destructive. And I think that by focusing on using those using and exhausting those tools first, we'll be in a better place going forward in general.
So we're hearing now there's a persuasive evidence that the Taliban has no intention of abiding by the rules of this most recent agreement. Do you see a way of the U.S. exiting Afghanistan without working with the Taliban?
Well, I mean, absolutely. I think that this was an important attempt for this administration to seek, right, the most constructive diplomatic solution they could to support a withdrawal. But again, it doesn't change the fact that a withdrawal is what we need. Anecdotally, over three tours, I saw consistently the longer we spent there and the more work we did to try to pump up the Afghan government in our own image, regardless of if we ever considered that was even sustainable for them, the more the Taliban itself, right, became fractured, became tribalistic. You know, they have their own infighting, right, because it's constantly shifting from a political organization to a military organization to an insurgent organization, and there are various wings and factions. I mean, it's the definition of a quagmire, right? It's the longer we stand there in the middle of this, the more complicated it becomes and the deeper we get stuck. If we use a measure of, well, things are a mess here, and what if there's terrorism that comes out of here? Well, I mean, under that logic, I mean, the U.S. military should be sitting in, you know, 100 different developing nations who are unstable and could sustain, some terrorist organization might use them as a training camp, and that's just silly. I mean, I'm not surprised because, again, I've seen those previous attempts at peace cause fractures, both in the government, cause fractures in these insurgent organizations, right? The Islamic State was imported, co-opted various factions of Taliban. Every country around Afghanistan has its own hooks into different insurgent groups, different Taliban leadership, which kind of speaks to the point of, like, these countries that are surrounding Afghanistan are investing time and energy into working with both the Afghan government and Taliban on their borders, right? Those are people who see Afghanistan's security is in their legitimate national interest. So why would we try to create something there that could only be sustained while we sit there and point a gun at it, when there are half a dozen countries there, you know, with substantial resources who actually will take benefit from Afghanistan becoming stabilized?
As you say, we have our hooks in, the U.S. government has their hooks in so many different pockets now in Afghanistan. Is there an ideal scenario where they can get out?
Yeah, I mean, I think you put trucks on boats and you put people on planes. And, you know, obviously we make ourselves available for diplomacy, for, you know, mediation of future disputes. You know, we try to share our educational system to future leaders of that country because, you know, there's been inconsistent school, right, access since 2001. So you've got, you know, just generations of people who have lost that ability to grow outside of, you know, people who have taken advantage of the U.S. presence to enrich themselves, who have money to send their kids to international schools and things like that, while other people just try to scrape by and feed themselves. And we need a reset. And then who knows? Maybe we need engagement with Afghanistan in the future. But without this hard reset, without bringing folks back and saying, okay, if we want to do something with the military there, we need to talk about it publicly and rigorously, and we need a vote so that we can hold people accountable who make a bad decision.
Yeah.
I mean, I think 60% of military veterans and families, right, all agree that we have to get out of there. The vast majority of the public is aligned on this issue, particularly in critical states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. I mean, that's where we've been focusing this campaign, because the majority of people there, I mean, politically, on across the spectrum from Bernie to Ted Cruz folks, can all come together and say, well, let's get our people out of there.
Well, Sam Rogers, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work with us.
Thank you.
Sam Rogers is a veteran who spent 3 tours in Afghanistan, and he's currently the Coalition's Director for Concerned Veterans for America in Wisconsin. The group will be having a symposium on endless war at the War Memorial Center here in Milwaukee on March 20th.